Welcome to the ADHD Women's Wellbeing Podcast. I'm Kate Moore Youssef, and I'm a wellbeing and lifestyle coach, EFT practitioner, mum to four kids, and passionate about helping more women to understand and accept their amazing ADHD brains. After speaking to many women just like me, and probably you, I know there is a need for more health and lifestyle support for women newly diagnosed with ADHD. In these conversations, you'll learn from insightful guests, hear new findings, and discover powerful perspectives and lifestyle tools to enable you to live your most fulfilled, calm, and purposeful life wherever you are on your ADHD journey. Here's today's episode. Today, I am absolutely delighted to have a guest here who I think is going to be a fascinating conversation. We've got Ashok Gupta here. Now, Ashok suffered from ME or chronic fatigue syndrome about 25 years ago when he was studying at Cambridge University. And through neurological research that he conducted, he managed to get himself 100% better. He then set up a clinic to treat others and then published the well-known neuroplasticity limbic retraining recovery program, an app known as the Gupta program, back in 2007. And since then, he has published several medical papers, including randomized controlled trials on long COVID, ME and CFS, and fibromyalgia, showing that the treatment is effective, and he is continually researching these conditions. And I really wanted Ashok here on the podcast because I know that so many of this community do suffer and have been challenged by a lot of these conditions. And so to be able to get to the root and understand it more, to be able to feel a bit more positive about the outcomes and being able to get support is what I hope we'll get out of this conversation. So Ashok, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah. So first of all, I mean, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your own story, what happened to you and kind of how this all began for you, the research into this.
Sure. So like many of us who are helping others with these types of conditions, it all started with my own experience, my own suffering that I went through, and then wanting to then help others when I learned some new things that helped me. So this started in the mid-90s when I was studying as an undergrad at Cambridge, and I was a young man. I had my whole life ahead of me. I was energetic, and you know, I certainly probably did suffer from anxiety. And I then got some kind of virus and thought, okay, I've got a virus, no problem. The virus went away, but my health, my physical health, seemed to deteriorate faster and faster and faster, to the point at which I couldn't concentrate on the words on a page. I suddenly found myself supremely exhausted mentally, physically, emotionally. At my worst moments, I had to crawl to the bathroom, and a whole set of new symptoms would come on. I'd get swollen glands. I would get aches and pains in my body. I would sleep for 12 hours, and yet I'd feel even more exhausted when I woke up. And none of this made sense to me. So then I went to my doctor, and they said, look, we don't know what this is. We don't know what to call it. We have no treatment for it. You might have it for the rest of your life. Goodbye. And that was just like a brick wall in front of me. And that spurred me on to really understand what these conditions are and what causes them. And I made a contract with the universe at that time. And I said, if I can just get myself well, I will dedicate the rest of my life to helping others with these conditions because they are so severe and so much suffering is going on. And so I then came across brain neurology and started studying that and found that really interesting and started understanding what may be going on in my own brain that was causing this condition. And in an ad hoc way, I retrained my brain, got myself 100% well, and then opened a clinic to treat others. And since then, we've obviously published medical papers, we've had studies, and we've got an app as well. So yeah, that's been my journey from my own experience and now supporting thousands around the world with these types of chronic illnesses.
Wow. I mean, I'm listening to that story and it gave me sort of, you know, real chills because first of all, I've got someone very close in our family who had a very similar story. And she was probably, you know, 19, 20. And we've gone through this whole process as well with her. And I'm really looking forward to sharing this conversation with her. She has gone through different types of programs and help and therapy, but still she has bad times. You talk about neuroimmune conditioned syndromes. Can we break that down so people understand what these are? And I know for a fact that a lot of people listening might relate to some of them.
Yeah, so we have so many mysterious modern diseases that mainstream medicine doesn't have any treatment for, really. There's only reliable effects. So I think the neuroimmune, so neuro means the brain, immune means obviously our immune system. And we notice now that many people are suffering from these types of conditions like chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, where there's pain in the body in addition to immune symptoms, long COVID, where people have COVID, but they have lingering effects. So that's kind of neuroimmune type conditions. And then sensitivity reactions. So more and more people are suffering from mold illness, chemical sensitivities. And in general, in the population, we're seeing more allergies, food sensitivities. Now, you know, what is going on? Why is that? And then another area is pain. So a lot of people having pain syndromes. And then finally, autonomic effects. So that's POTS, dysautonomia, those types of illnesses, which we're seeing on the rise as well. So all these mysterious illnesses are related, I believe, in terms of their underlying components and the underlying reasons behind them. And we call them conditioned syndromes. So neuroimmune conditioned syndromes, NICs. So I believe all of these different conditions, the reason they share symptomatology is because they involve the brain, so the neuro, they involve the immune system. They are conditioning effects. So what I mean by that is the brain learns something new and therefore it learns to overreact and overrespond. That's the conditioning part of it. Conditioning just means learning. It's learned to overrespond. And syndrome is the idea that rather than saying this is the definitive symptom that defines it, syndrome means there's a whole set of symptoms that is unique to each patient. You know, I often find out, are we talking with about a mold patient with chronic fatigue, or is it a chronic fatigue syndrome patient that has mold, right? Where is the dividing line? And it's because these are syndromes, they're a collection of symptoms unique to each person. And so we treat these NICs through a very different way, which is this brain retraining, realizing that ultimately it is in the brain. And, you know, as you talk about neurodivergent, we discussed earlier, didn't we, that actually if you look at people with ADHD, you look at people with autism, you look at people with hypermobility syndrome, they've all got some commonalities in terms of presentation, in terms of things that may be going on in the brain. And we call it neurodivergent because we understand that ultimately the root cause is something that's slightly different in the brain that's causing that symptomatology downstream. And I believe that that actually makes it a risk factor for these other types of more chronic diseases that we heal.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely fascinating. And, you know, the way I've kind of seen this, because I'm not a doctor and because it's not been sort of explained to me in the same way that you've just explained. And we were just saying off camera that we had Dr. Jessica Eccles on the podcast, who is a specialist and research expert, I would say, in hypermobility. And we sort of discussed it on that episode. But the way I've kind of always perceived how these conditions show up alongside neurodivergence is inflammation, stress, trauma that has been sort of internalized. And, you know, whether that's through our nervous system, through our neural pathways, where there's this heightened sense of danger, we've been hypervigilant, and maybe there's been a specific situation, a specific trauma that, and we've sort of like gone into shock and our nervous system's responded, or we've just never felt like we quite fitted in and we've never been able to operate on the same, in the same way as neurotypical people, or with the same energy, or work in the same capacity. And so I've always felt that there's just something wrong, which has constantly been sort of re-internalized and held and suppressed and masked. And that is very often when I see people coming with fibromyalgia, chronic pain, chronic fatigue, that it seems to be a reaction. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's external situations and there's also genetic factors at play. Would you say, is that a basic way of being able to understand why we're seeing a lot of these NICs alongside neurodivergence?
Yes. And I would like to present a hypothesis in terms of how we look at it and what may be the connection between all of this. Yeah. So let me take the analogy of a bucket. So imagine that our ability to handle stress, and that's physical stress, emotional stress, mental stress, spiritual stress, relationship stress, is this bucket. Yeah. And what happens is we are born we have a certain bucket that depends on various factors in terms of our capacity to handle stress. And this actually starts in the womb. So we know that how stressed our mother is whilst we're in the womb impacts on the factory setting of our brain, especially a part of the brain called the amygdala, which is all to do with mm-hmm. our threat perception and threat response. And we know that that is compromised in ADHD and also in autism. We know the amygdala is overreactive in autism as well, and also in hypermobility. So that's, I believe, is the common factor is, what is the factory setting of that threat response system in the brain? And that is impacted by our gestation period. It's impacted by the birth experience itself. But many people don't realize that actually the birth experience, how long it takes and how traumatic it is, impacts on the brain's perception of danger. And then, of course, the biggest impact is the first 5 to 7 years of life. So how did the child feel in the presence of their parents, siblings, caregivers, etc.? Did they feel safe? Did they feel nurtured? Or at the other scale, was it trauma with a small t, trauma with a big T? Was there abuse? So you mean anywhere along that scale. But even a perception that I'm not taken care of or the world is a threat can be enough. So even a childhood illness can create that sense of heightened threat perception. And that then continues through our teenage years. And that's when we might start seeing then some of these neurodivergent aspects. So obviously with hypermobility, it's difficult to say that may be, you know, more genetic, but certainly with ADHD and the autism aspects, at what stage does that then become nature and nurture? Where do those two align and meet in early childhood years to then create those differences and effects in the brain? And I believe at the core of it, it's the brain now is more protective and therefore over-detects threats in our environment. Mm. And if you think about it, that can actually explain a lot around autism, but also around ADHD. Because if the brain's primary driver is threat perception, or what do I need to be aware of to defend, it can't focus on one thing at a time. Because if it does, it is ignoring other potential threats that may be in our environment and therefore needs to switch fast in order to maintain that awareness. So it could be that is ADHD actually a response? And I'd love your thoughts on that because you'll be the expert there. But is actually ADHD a response to needing to be more aware of threats in the environment and therefore not focusing on one thing at a time, or just being needing to be aware of multiple things at the same time? So that can then create the risk factor in the brain that when we're older and a new threat comes along, yeah. So let me take a step back. I'm getting ahead of myself. So we went back to the bucket analogy. So we've got all of these threats that have been perceived in our environment as we were when we were younger, which then shrinks the bucket. So our ability to handle threats and stress shrinks as a result of a background in trauma. But the second effect, and I think this is really interesting, is the physical threats that we experience. So toxins in our food, pollution around us, household cleaning products, all of these things also go into the bucket and impact on threat perception and may have neurological effects as well. And then thirdly, the sociological effects, the emotional effects of family dynamics. We've talked about the trauma as well, but it can be other effects that are going on in our lives as we're growing up. And it obviously can be genetic effects as well. So this combination of nature and nurture in our earlier years then creates this perception of threat and how big this bucket is. So if the bucket's very big, our capacity to handle stress is okay. But if it's small, we will become more sensitive to the environment, whether it be emotionally sensitive, physiologically sensitive, and biologically sensitive. So when a threat does come along, and that threat can be an emotional threat, but let's take in this example, a physical threat. So we're talking about an infection, bacterial, viral threat, mold exposure. The brain now thinks, hey, I don't have capacity to handle this extra threat. I need to over-respond to this threat.
Yeah.
And even once I fought it off, maybe it's still present. So therefore the brain gets conditioned and then learns to over-respond to these threats in the environment. And that then might be the connection between childhood experiences, neurodivergent categorizations, and then going on to having physical chronic illnesses.
Yeah, it's very well explained. I think the only thing that I would maybe sort of argue with is that I definitely believe that neurodivergence is genetic, that we're born with it, sort of neurologically, it's there. But like you say, the nature and the nurture, whether, like you say, we've had trauma in our early years, how we've been brought up, chaos, dysfunction, our family life, our socioeconomic situation, how we've been schooled, parented, all these different factors can then either exacerbate the symptoms, or we're able to live life relatively sort of on an even keel until, unfortunately, like you say, this bucket then gets smaller. And we're seeing this specifically with women right now who are hitting burnout because the demands of life are just so much. We're this sort of generation who are working pretty much full time, parenting, maybe looking after elderly parents. Menopause is kicking in, and that's exacerbating our ADHD symptoms. And all the external, you know, just the way the world is right now, social media, there's just so much. Our capacity to be able to deal with it, maybe our resilience has got lower over after COVID. I think there's so many different factors. But what I believe is happening is that so many of the women that I'm seeing who have previously kind of just about got through life, maybe they've had chronic fatigue, maybe they've had burnout cycles, maybe they've noticed their nervous system sort of, you know, always being on sort of a hypervigilant level. Anxiety has always been there, but something's just tipped them over. And that could be a family, you know, like a grief, divorce. Very often it has been sort of post-COVID, things have sort of come to the surface. So it's being able to understand, I guess, ourselves and how we've always been, you know, looking back at childhood and understand where those factors have come to play, where those traumas have happened, big, little T traumas. And now how we want to move through life, feeling calmer, more energized, more regulated, more fulfilled, being able to choose the way we want to live without all the added pressures that we are right now. And I do see the correlation, I wonder, with things like fibromyalgia and chronic pain. Are you seeing sort of similar patterns in your practice?
Yes, we are. And I think it's great. This discussion is, you know, groundbreaking because it's actually where we are experts in different areas, but we're seeing the convergence of this and seeing where the risk factors are. And we're definitely seeing a higher potential preponderance of people with autism or being on the spectrum, or certainly with ADHD, hypermobility as well, and seeing all of those as risk factors. And just to go back to your point, I definitely agree with you that there are, you know, there's a strong genetic component to many of these different conditions, neurodivergent conditions. And as you say, it's whether it gets exacerbated to the point at which it then interferes with normal life. So there's probably a lot of people who have that genetic predisposition who, for whatever reason, because of all these other influences, the toxic influences, the emotional influences, never really go on to manifesting the symptoms of that that then would interfere with daily life. But if there are things that happen in our childhood and whatever those exposures are, mental, physical, emotional, they then become that nurture aspect that then exacerbate and make it interfere with just being able to live life normally. Those both factors are supremely important. And I think that what we are seeing is that, once again, this idea of the amygdala as a central point, if we have that increased threat perception and threat detection and threat processing, that means that the delicate balance of our immune system is compromised. So it can over-defend. Mm. And the question I always like to ask people is, what is the biggest question of all? Why are we here? Right? So a big philosophical question. Why are we here? Well, at some level, we are here because over millions of years of evolution, this brain and this nervous system have learned to adapt to our environment, survive, and pass on our genes to the next generation. And a core part of that, a core part of survival, is threat detection and being able to survive in a dangerous world. And so our system is primed for that. That's its number one priority. It doesn't care about your well-being. It doesn't care about whether you're happy. It cares whether you survive. And so what happens is, as we live and now we're being brought up in a more and more physically, emotionally, biologically dangerous world, the system itself now starts prioritizing survival and therefore can get stuck in these loops of over defensive responses, over survival, which from a genetic perspective and a survival perspective and an evolutionary perspective is absolutely the right thing for our brain to do. It's just that it doesn't feel good to us. And so therefore, this is what's so fascinating about brain retraining. Brain retraining is saying our brain is doing what it thinks is best, but it just needs updating and retraining to what is best for us.
Yeah.
And that's where this, the secret sauce is.
Yeah. And this is what I wanted to get onto because I'm hugely passionate about neuroplasticity, about understanding how we can either overwrite or retrain our neural pathways. And I think with ADHD, we've been given very little help and support, you know, in the past, over the years. It's always been sort of pharmaceuticals, take medication and goodbye. Whereas now I hope that the future is this, is neuroplasticity, is understanding how our brain's made up so we can reprogram it and choose different thoughts, choose different feelings. And so would you say that we are, you know, with neuroscience almost exploding now and the breaking it down and people understanding neuroscience maybe from TikTok, Instagram, whatever that is. But would you say that this potentially is the future to helping with these conditions?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's the future. I think the exciting thing is that traditional medicine is focused on what is measurable and what is a hardware problem, right? So, you know, I like splitting it into software and hardware. So traditional medicine says, right, something goes wrong with your car. Let's fix the engine. Let's fix the light. Let's fix the door. But in modern cars, what tends to go wrong is the electrical system, the nervous system, the information system. And modern medicine is... I've got some great, I don't want to put down mainstream medicine. There's got some great approaches, but ultimately a new approach is required for the wiring, for the electrical system. And that is where neuroplasticity comes in. And it's very difficult for drugs to target our neuroplasticity or to change the training or the programming of the system itself. And that's where these approaches, where it's almost like, I mean, the most equivalent would be when someone's rehabilitating from a stroke. So imagine someone's had a stroke. Now, you can't give them more and more drugs. They have to relearn some new neural pathways to regain control of an arm, let's say. Let's say they've damaged the brain and they can't move their limbs. Right, so they now need to rehabilitate, relearn, create new neural pathways or strengthen existing neural pathways. So we already have an element of that in medicine, but now it's saying let's apply that to so many different neurological disorders, to emotional disorders, and we can then see direct effects in the brain as a result of that. So I think that neuroplasticity is absolutely the future of so many different illnesses. I say 60 to 70% of the illnesses that present in a doctor's surgery cannot be sufficiently dealt with by traditional medicine and actually require a brand new approach. And that is the promise of this. So my hope is in 5-10 years' time, you go to your doctor with one of these chronic diseases and actually they prescribe neuroplasticity first, rather than it being something people find 10 years later, you know, after exhausting all other avenues. So yeah, that is the future.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your program, what it's based on, what it does, and I guess what you're seeing. I mean, breakthroughs and where people begin and where they end. Yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so our program is a home study course. So we wanted to make it super easy for people to do. And it was based on my one-on-one work for about over a decade working with patients and really understanding what works. So it's delivered as an app or an online program. And there's lots of videos people can watch and there's lots of audio exercises. And people go through that brain retraining. And they also have weekly webinars with myself. And something which has been a game changer is something called daily Guptasize, which are daily Zoom calls with our coaches on nervous system regulation and brain retraining, which makes it super easy. And in fact, very easy for people with ADHD, because if they think that, okay, the idea of sitting down and watching a program and applying it is not something they're able to do, just coming on a Zoom call is much easier. And they know that we're going to take care of you and take you through the exercises.
Yeah.
And that's how it's delivered. And the main aspects of it are three R's, the three R's of the program. So number one is regulating the nervous system, relaxing the nervous system. And we know obviously that's a core feature of, you know, ADHD. And therefore, this is all about what tools and techniques can people use. So we're not dogmatic to say it has to be this tool or this technique, but certainly we use things like somatic retraining, breathing techniques, meditation, visualization, whatever it is that works, learning to calm the nervous system. Because if we don't calm the nervous system, the brain is not neuroplastic. Yeah. So this is an interesting, you know, outcome of neuroscience, is that our brains are less open to change if it's stimulated or overstimulated or stressed. Yeah. Which makes sense, because when we're in that survival state in stress, the brain doesn't want to learn anything new. It's just trying to protect. Yeah. So we need to regulate the nervous system. The second R is the brain retraining the brain. And that's the core techniques. And we have a special 7-step process that people go through, which is based on the science of change. And it's physically, because if you try to shift something in the brain, it's like Einstein said, or paraphrasing Einstein, you can't use the same thinking to change something that created it in the first place. And in a similar way, if you try to think your way out of this, it's not going to work. You have to physically get your body moving. And therefore, we have a 7-step process where people step through different steps and communicate and become aware of their different parts of their brain, and then use ultimately visualization as well. And that's just one example of a technique. As I said, we've got somatic brain retraining. We have something called the accelerator, which is an accelerated process. All these different tools people experiment with and see what works for them to calm the brain down and shift this response that's causing this illness. And finally, the third R of the program is re-engaging with joy. So this is all about how can we make sure that people stay well, because there's no point getting well and then having another trigger in your life which brings all the symptoms back. So how do you keep your nervous system calm for the rest of your life? And we do a lot of parts work there and self-awareness techniques to support that. So those are the three R's of the program. And as I said, they're delivered through an online process. And we're getting some great results with people.
I'd love to hear what you've sort of seen, maybe some of the more extreme cases of someone coming to you who, I presume, I mean, from what I've seen, there's a lot of desperation because there's been a lot of invalidation, a lot of dismissal from conventional doctors. And again, I don't want to put down Western medicine or conventional medicine, because I know that they do a huge amount of good in acute situations. But when it's long-term, more chronic conditions where sometimes there's no answers and it is all a bit ambiguous, people just kind of feel a bit abandoned and a bit kind of like, well, just go and do some yoga, or go and, you know, take some walks or something, or go and have CBT therapy. And I wonder, like, what have you seen when people come and kind of finally they feel heard and they feel listened to and validated? And what kind of progress, I mean, how long does it take as well through this program?
Our core unique feature is that we have a really compassionate approach, because we know that people have gone through a lot of suffering. They've not been understood or validated, even by their own families sometimes. Yeah. And the number one starting point is for people to feel like they can relax. We're going to take care of you now. It's a whole ecosystem of support. And that's really, really important. So the daily Gupta size, for instance, the daily Zoom calls, has been great for people, because if they're isolated and they feel alone, they're coming on a Zoom call with 300 other people on there and realizing, I'm not alone with this. There are other people and we can mutually support each other. So that's been fantastic. And then obviously we have the coaches that support people. Now, some of the more extreme cases we've had, I always use this case because it's the one that sticks in my mind the most, is we had a guy from New Zealand who was suffering from fibromyalgia for about 30 years. Yeah. And he was in his 80s, his early 80s. So you can imagine, when you're in your 80s, you're already experiencing symptoms just from old age, never mind what might be chronic disease. And he is really despondent. And he worked on our program diligently. And after about 3 to 6 months, he suddenly got 80% better, 85% better. And I said, what are you going to do now? And he said, well, I'm going to travel the world. I'm going to do all the things that I've wanted to do all my life. And he went and did that. And that was amazing to me, because I thought, if a man in his early 80s can retrain his brain, when we think that perhaps the brain's not retrainable anymore, we can all do it. That is the amazing promise of neuroplasticity, that it's something inherent within our brain. It's just about the right techniques to access it. I think that's the key thing, is what are the techniques that can power through and make sure that we can retrain. And then with long COVID, we have hundreds of patients with long COVID. And because people have had it for a shorter period of time, sometimes we can get miraculous recovery within weeks from long COVID. Mm. Now, obviously others, it takes months. So we say to people, it's a 6-month program, because we don't want people to become complacent You know, if you've had an illness for years and years, if not decades, maybe you can retrain within weeks, but maybe it will take months. Maybe it will take over 6 months. Therefore, we want people to really dedicate their time and energies to it for a considerable period of time to make sure they get the maximum benefit. And unfortunately, that can be one aspect of the program, which is that, you see, if people have fear, if they think that it's not going to work, then they're less likely to be motivated to engage with it. And that's why belief and trust is so important, to build up that trust. Yeah. And that's what we're constantly working with patients, say, just come on our webinars each week. Trust that it's going to work. Otherwise, you're going to quit too soon. The brain was getting the message. It just needed more time.
I'm interested to hear, have you had validation from mainstream doctors? Or is there a way that this can be prescribed by doctors who are just not able to refer on to, you know, in my head, I'm thinking, well, you'd be referred to maybe a pain management clinic, or you'd be referred to a neurologist or an endocrinologist, and then you kind of hit a bit of a wall. So are you finding that some doctors are now much more open-minded and being able to prescribe this kind of option when the other options haven't worked?
It's step by step. Certainly the last few years, it's really taken off, I think. You know, neuroplasticity 10 years ago, we were one of the only people doing it, and now it's becoming more popular. And I think in the mainstream medical profession, it's slower because people are just opening up to these ideas because their system is based on the reductionist philosophy, which is something's wrong with the body, we can target it at the micro level, at the chemical level. Yeah. And this is something which is much more holistic. It's much more in the neurology. It's much more in the electrical system. And therefore, it takes time to shift the medical model. But certainly, many doctors informally recommend our program. But where we're seeing a much bigger impact is with functional integrative doctors, chiropractors, yeah, nutritionists. They're seeing the benefit of their protocols working alongside our protocols and attacking it from two directions. And they've certainly been more open to it because they understand the idea of a functional illness where the system itself is maladaptive and responding inappropriately. And then what can we do to support that? So nutrition and gut advice can be great, but doctors also realize that there's something fundamental that's going on because someone can heal and get better through supplements and medications, but then the moment they have a stress, wham, all the symptoms come back and the existing protocols are no longer having an impact. And therefore, the neuroplasticity approach is gaining more and more popularity. And we have literally almost 5,000 different doctors and practitioners around the world now recommending our program. They're part of our database. And that's really encouraging as well to see that. So that's really our aim, is to educate the mainstream more. But that always comes through medical research. So something we're prioritizing are these randomized controlled trials. And we've got some great data already. But that, if we can get larger scale trials, then the medical profession can't ignore that.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about the research that you've done and what's coming out of that research.
So we've now conducted 3 randomized controlled trials using our treatment, and 2 of them, probably the most important ones, the ones that were done recently. So we did one on fibromyalgia, and we found that the GUPT program, compared to a control group program, which was a relaxation program, the GUPT program reduced fibromyalgia scores by 40% within 8 weeks. Yeah. Wow. And we're a 6-month program, so 8 weeks is great. And there was zero effect in the control group. And we halved pain, we increased functional capacity by 50% in 8 weeks, and we halved depression and anxiety. It was a great result, very small results in the control group. And then with long COVID randomized controls trial, that was two years ago, we found that the GUPT program was compared to a wellness program. So this wellness program had diet, sleep, supplements, activity. So it was a proper program. So it was a proper control group. And we compare these programs, and after 12 weeks, the GUPT program was 4 times more effective at reducing fatigue and exhaustion, and twice as effective at increasing levels of energy in patients with long COVID, which was an amazing result, because when do you ever get a clinical study where it was a 400% response. And that was a published study as well. And then recently, we've just published a clinical audit on our patients. So this was about 300 to 400 patients. And we found that across 14 different conditions, patients had anywhere between a 60 to 116% improvement in their symptoms after 3 months. And that's a published study. People can read that. And that was for fibromyalgia, long COVID, you know, Lyme disease, pain syndromes, a whole host of different conditions. And that's what really then supports the hypothesis that a lot of these conditions are related and linked. And ultimately, this core process is targeting the brain. And then the downstream collection of symptoms improves, no matter how we categorize these types of illnesses.
Yeah, I mean, it's really so interesting because it's sort of solidifying the conversation I had with Dr. Jessica Eccles, who was amazing at identifying all the signs of hypermobility and Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And we talked all about that and how we can spot it and be more aware. And then at the end of the conversation, I said, well, what can we do now? How can we help ourselves? And she said, well, that's the problem. You know, we right now, the treatment that we know works is sort of breath work, meditation, relaxation, specific nutritional choices, sleep. It almost seems like a bit of an antidote to the way society is going, you know, over the past 20, 30 years, that it's just been do more, be more, succeed, achieve. And I wonder, like what you said at the beginning, was this is almost like a reaction to what's going on. And we're sort of just been told to survive. And the only way we can survive in this very fast-paced world is to just keep going, keep going. And if we've more sort of prone to the sensitivities, maybe being neurodivergent, that this is just not working with our bodies and our immune systems and nervous systems. You know, the fact that we're seeing chronic stress, you know, so prevalent, and we're seeing burnout is just sort of part and parcel of being a busy person. People come to me and just say, I'm so overwhelmed, I'm so frazzled, I can't sleep, I just feel like I just want to pack everything in. It's not showing me that we're living in a society that is right for us as humans, but specifically for neurodivergent humans. Mm-hmm. So I think what you're saying is very powerful. My big question is, and it upsets me because I do feel that there's always such a privilege when it comes to all this holistic healthcare and the functional medicine and nutritionists and osteopaths and all these amazing services and support. And unfortunately, so many people can't afford it. That we're restricted by finances. Is there a way that people can access what you do at a lower level? How does that work?
So we certainly have a free trial. So people can come on, watch some of the videos, listen to some of the audios, and benefit initially from those types of approaches. And what we've tried to do is keep the price as low as possible for our treatment compared to lots of other treatments out there. So our treatment is $400, which is about, I think, £320 or something like that for a whole year's package of treatment. So we think that's very reasonable. We've kept the cost as low as possible. And within that, people get the videos, the audios. They also get the weekly webinars with myself and the daily sessions. So we've calculated for a dollar a day, you're essentially getting daily support, weekly support, tons of information, a support group. So there's a lot of information that people get. And for us, until we get the large-scale phase 3 trials, we give a one-year money-back guarantee on that treatment. So people can use the treatment. If it doesn't work for them, then after 6 months and any time up to a year, people can return the program and get a refund and spend that money on something else. So we've tried to make that also a bit of a safety valve to reduce the risk of taking on a treatment like this. And in the future, our hope is that we get large-scale phase 3 trials. We prove that this is effective with thousands of patients. And then this becomes prescribed on national health services around the world or becomes part of an insurance claim. And that is our aim, to make this affordable and accessible through primary healthcare. And that's the ultimate aim. And that can only be done through research. You know, that is the ultimate part of it. But for us to be able to provide it, we obviously have that cost there. And I hope that people will see the benefits of this, realize it's kind of low risk. I mean, you can, you know, certainly in the US, you could spend $300 or $400 just on one session with a clinician, frankly. So we hope that it is still reasonable for people to take something on like this.
It's fascinating and a lot of people will be very interested. Can you tell me a little bit about how people can read more information, learn a little bit, maybe, you know, go for the free trial?
Yeah, so they can come to our website, which is guptaprogram.com. So G-U-P-T-A program.com. And they can also go to App Store or Play Store and download the free app, start retraining their brain straight away with some of the initial tools and techniques that we have there and watch some videos. So that's what I advise people to do. And I think what we've also found is that a lot of people have been using our program for things that we never expected. So things like, for instance, OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Mm-hmm. People have found benefit from using our program for that, as well as physical conditions. And certainly, you know, offline, I'd love to explore with you, with ADHD, could there be aspects of our program that could support people with that? And are there perhaps some studies we can do? Because from more and more I'm learning about ADHD myself, I do feel that the kinds of approaches we have could really benefit people with that. And I'd love to see how that could work. Yeah. So yeah, that's how people can find our program. They can take the free trial, and I'd love people to experience it. And something that I think a lot of your viewers would find beneficial is the daily Gupta Side. So the first part of it is free to anybody. So you don't even need a paid subscription. Mm-hmm. You can join the daily Gupta Side, the healing meditation part of it, which is some somatic work, some breathing, some meditation, and that can just help you regulate your nervous system without even needing to pay anything.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I'm very much, I talk about nervous system regulation all the time on the podcast. I've got a 4-part workshop series that I did, all based on polyvagal theory and ADHD. And I just saw there was so much interconnection of being able to help our ADHD symptoms and help lessen them. And I guess sort of lessen the heightened response that we have in day-to-day life, which then exacerbates our ADHD symptoms as well through nervous system regulation. So I just think I really are at the beginning of all of this right now. And it's fascinating to talk to you, Ashok. So thank you so much for your time. And I really look forward to connecting again in the future, because I think there's lots more to be discussed.
Yes, thank you so much. It's been real fun.
I really hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you did and it resonated with you, I would absolutely love it if you could share on your platforms or maybe leave a review and a rating wherever you listen to your podcasts. And please do check out my website, adhdwomenswellbeing.co.uk, for lots of free resources and paid for workshops. I'm uploading new things all the time and I would absolutely love to see you there. Take care and see you for the next episode.